Welcome to another episode of Let's Chat With. Joining me is magician and mind reader and Philadelphia's own Lindsay Noel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
As I said in the introduction, you are a magician and mind reader. What got you into magic and mind reading?
So I performed as a cabaret and nightlife MC for over a decade in Philadelphia. I produced shows, everything from small bar shows to like 4 day long, 60 performer full festivals. And as much as I really loved that performance world and getting to host all those really fabulous, glamorous people, the nightlife world was getting tiring as I was getting older. And I wanted to perform full time. So I shifted my skills to just being charming and witty on stage to keep a show together to being charming and witty on stage to distract people from doing magical things.
Do you remember the first trick or illusion that you ever performed?
Back before I was doing magic full time and I was still doing burlesque and cabaret stuff, I had just met Francis Minotti. We were doing a show. We always say famously that neither of us wanted to do, but we both ended up meeting at the show that we didn't want to be at. About 2 weeks later, I put him in a burlesque show for Comic-Con where he did a gambit act. So as Rogue, I tried to touch him until I stole his powers, and then I could float something. I levitated a card. So the first thing I was doing was, you know, invisible thread work with a levitation. So I didn't start off very easy.
What kind of magic scene does Philadelphia have? Are there many stores related to magic? Like what kind of brick and mortar places, like any magic stores?
No, there used to be South Street Magic, but it's no longer around. There's a theater. There's the Smoke and Mirrors Magic Theater. And that's not really in Philadelphia, but you would say it's the Philadelphia Magic Theater. There's not a brick and mortar store. The magic scene itself, I would say, is pretty good. The professional magicians in this city are all incredibly talented and awesome people. We have folks here like Randy Shine and Eric Jones and Mark D'Souza and Kevin Bethay. There's like a ton of great guys. Oh, Josh Rosado's from here. There's like Francis Minotti, you know, my husband. Meadow Perry is amazing and she's in this area. So there's a lot of good magicians, a lot of Calvin Tan too, also from Philly. So there's a lot of good magicians in this part of.
You perform solo, but also as part of the duo called Matt, couple of magicians. Your partner is Francis Minotti. How did you two meet and what's like working with your husband?
We met, as I said, at a show neither of us wanted to do. At the time, I lived in Fishtown. Now we have a house in West Philadelphia. And we met at the show and we didn't want to be there, but it was a Monday night. Neither of us had anything better to do. Francis was just trying to get lots of flight time on his Fool Us act at the time. That was 2015. 14. So he was working on his Scrabble piece that he did first in 2015. I just happened to live around the corner and didn't have anything to do. And a performer dropped out last minute. So I went to cover that. Yeah, we met that night. We hung out really late. We became really fast friends. I was excited about meeting him. And I was very impressed by him. I hadn't seen magic in a long time, not since I was a kid. It was the first time seeing magic as an adult and being excited about it and not thinking it was like corny or stupid. What Francis did was impressive and amazing and smart and funny. I thought he was cute. So yeah, we met at that show and we hung out very late. And then we worked for years. I convinced him to work in burlesque. It's funny because I literally was basically just saying, why don't you trade my company for actual like well-paid work? What if, hear me out, we make you a stupid costume, make you learn a stupid accent, and then you have to do a bunch of dumb things that are somehow related, but also do magic while you do them? And he said, sure, because I guess he also liked me too. So working together in that capacity was pretty fun. As I knew Francis, I was also getting a little out of being in the burlesque world. I wasn't as interested in doing it anymore. It wasn't really sparking a lot of joy in me to work in that world and make that kind of art. I was really proud of all the stuff I've done. I still am. But it was time to definitely do something bigger if I was going to keep performing. Francis and I started dating in 2017. And in 2018, in the summer, I stopped doing burlesque entirely to focus on magic solely. I'd been doing magic, even professionally, on the side, kind of, I guess, starting in about 2017. But in 2018, I was like, this is where all my focus needs to be. So I started doing that. And that's when we made Couple Magicians in the end of 2016, beginning of 2017. And then from there, we started performing together. Now I was doing solo performances performances in those shows together, because I was very concerned with, if I'm doing magic, I'm not an assistant. Will not be an assistant. No one is ever going to think I am the assistant. I do not want that. So yeah, that was a large part of when I was starting out, why I was doing solo pieces as well. But yeah, we're working together now. Fast forward, we got married. Pretty great. We did it right before the pandemic hit, so we had the longest honeymoon ever. We get to just stay inside for 2.5 years together, basically. It's wonderful. It's very enjoyable. I think there's times when it's challenging, because when you spend all of your time with someone, you're going to fight sometimes. So there's definitely times where we get to an impasse while we are working together, where one of us, especially creatively, like if we don't agree on something creatively, we usually have to call another person to be like, okay, because there's only two parties, right? And if both sides truly believe that their creative decision is the better one, then you need a third party to be like, yes or no. We usually can't, and it doesn't happen that often that there's such a disconnect on it. But when it does, it's like, shoot, how do we figure this out now?
Also on Twitch, you and Francis stream Magic Storytime. What is Magic Storytime?
So it started over the pandemic. We did a small version beginning in 2020. I thought that if everyone had to stay home, I love reading stories out loud. I like performing. I will read stories and do magic tricks based on the story. So Francis was helping me create the magic tricks, you know, generally classic stuff that we would sort of tailor to match the short story. I would choose a story and read it. And I started in like an insane person. I was like, we're doing it every day. We're going to do magic story time every single day. We're going to do it 4 days a week. Actually, that's no. Listen, I've come to my senses. We're going to do it once a week. And so it kind of like petered out in frequency, but we were doing a light version, no puppet, no set. It was just the various cute chairs in my house with like a little bit of nice lighting and two phones set up to stream on two different platforms, right? So like there were both phones signed into different accounts, on one on Instagram, one on Facebook. So I could be on multiple platforms doing it. And so that version went over really well. I liked it. I had fun doing it. I got the idea to do it with a puppet because I like hanging out with puppet. And I also don't know how to do anything the easy way. It was one thing when we were slapdashing in at the start of the pandemic, nobody knew get all out on anything about the internet and how to do the streaming show. So everyone kind of was like, we're figuring it out. By the winter of 2021, it was time to do something a little more large. And so I contacted over the summer of 2021. I reached out to my friend Andrew to see if he would be the puppeteer. He said yes. I reached out to another friend that I knew had great puppets and said, hey, can we borrow one of these puppets? And he said yes. I wanted to get our own eventually, so I contacted the original puppet maker and went on a whole journey trying to get the proper puppet, because Luna's Puppets, who is an amazing company, I highly recommend them to anyone that ever needs a puppet, but they've changed their eye mechanism, which is fine. It's great. It's better eye mechanism now. Anyway, we tried to get a puppet. We couldn't get a puppet. I've sent a puppet back and forth across the country at like 4 times at this point. It is not their fault. They're trying to match a puppet that we have fallen in love with and decided is Merle. And his eyes go like this. It makes him look kind of stupid, but he's very smart and sweet. And there's a lot of personality. The fact that his eyes are a bit cattywampus. Every puppet we get, the eyes are too good and the puppet looks too smart and we can't make it. It just can't. Every time we pick it up, we're like, it's not Merle. So this poor man, Raiden Gorby, who has been patient and sweet, has been going back and forth with me since October of 2021 on getting this puppet. And it's just because the puppet that we're using that is the same design, it's just old. It's an old puppet. So it's got this, whatever it is then was then is not what it is now pattern-wise. So we can't anyway, so now we have an old puppet. We have to just keep using the same old puppet. I built a set with Francis. Francis built a set. I designed the set. But we built a set in our living room. If, for those of your viewers and listeners that are not familiar with Philadelphia Row Home, they are skinny at the widest point. They're usually, this one, mine is 16 feet wide, but the stairs come in, so it's more like 10 where the set goes. And the living room isn't very deep. So we built a raised set for our puppeteer to sit in. There's multiple trap doors in the set. It is a 6-foot deep by 8-foot wide footprint. It's got 3 walls. So the back wall and the 2 side walls. There's a door to enter in through the back. We have a false vine wall behind that, so that when you show up, the format of the show is that a guest shows up. I also show up. We're always at Merle's house. So we're at Merle the Literate Monsters. He is hosting us to read him a story. And we would read a story. We also did pre-recorded segments. It was basically like just a real television show. It was a combination of live and pre-recorded. So the story itself itself was read live. The guests performed live, and I did the magic trick live at the end. But in order to get ourselves in and out of scenes seamlessly, we recorded segments and sketches that would fill in our transitional places. So an episode's outline basically went, we play the opening credits. Merle's sitting in his house. I knock on the door. I come in. We talk about the story we're going to read and talk about last week a little bit. And then we read the first half of the story where I read to Merle. He makes commentary. We make jokes. We read the story together. Halfway through the story, there's a knock on the door. We're surprised. Someone has stopped by. We cut to a pre-recorded travel segment, either about a place in Philadelphia that Merle goes to called Merle in the World, or the places you'll go again, about weird roadside attractions and what I call level 100 weirdo art that are all over the country. And so one of those segments plays usually about 5 minutes. We come back and now the guest and Merle are in the room together and they do a performance and then Merle interviews them. And then they get a phone call that they have to take in the kitchen, which is, so I come in with the phone and say, so-and-so is on the line. It could be any person. It's usually someone ridiculous and kind of famous. They're on the line. They take the phone call, talk about, we had something called shower thoughts in every episode. So shower thoughts are Merle's brilliant ideas in the shower. I would say, one of us would say, that reminds me of this thing. Oh, we can show you right now with the magic of a cutaway. And then we would go to shower thoughts, and then shower thoughts goes into our sketch for that episode, which was like a dramatic sketch, well, comedy, dramatic, whatever, sketch that ranged in theme. We had a set of three for Florence Henderson, the nonfiction chicken, which is basically our Sam the Eagle. She would show up and yell at us about not having educational content. We had a three-piece segment called Andrew Styles Union Puppeteer, where Andrew just sat around in a blue suit with the hood up, but it turned out that his thing, the running joke in that is that he has a disorder that every time he talks, he has to do this, which makes it so hard to hold things and learn things, but he decides he wants to learn magic. And you can imagine how great it goes if his hand always does this when he's talking. And then there was like building the house and like a documentary. And then we go, so those things happen. We come back in at the end. We finish the second half of the story. We do the magic trick, sometimes with the guest if I need to volunteer, sometimes just straight to the camera or with the people in the Twitch chat, and then be in the episode and there's ending credits.
What kind of guests would you get for that show?
We had really great guests. We had a variety entertainers, a lot of magicians, because it was magic story time. So Eric Jones was one of the guests. Randy Shine was one of the guests. Friend of ours who is a very awesome old storyteller, magician, and photographer, Don Camp, came on and did a piece that he has, like a long piece about Black Herman. Fascinating Black magician from the 30s in the States that is incredible. Their story's wild. Kate Nix came on, who is a musician. She does a stream Twitch show and she's really great and she's been doing it longer than anyone. So when everyone else was clueless at the start of the pandemic, Kate was very ready and like already had the whole thing unlocked. It was impressive. Crawley is another really good performer that was on. He's a juggler. Dave Darwin, also a juggler. Julianne Peters is also a musician. It was a range of different people that did different kinds of things.
Why in the name Merle?
Merle, that was the puppet's name. It was my friend Gus Clark. That's his puppet. And Merle's the name of the puppet. So I never changed it because I loved it. And I felt it. So I used to work at a haunted house with Gus Clark about a decade ago. I was the costume designer and he was in the makeup room, and he sometimes would just bring in his puppets, and I totally fell in love with both puppets. I love them both.
You know, one of my previous guests, Meadow Perry, and you worked with her a few times. How did that come about? What was that like?
We first came into contact because I hit her up to be like, I'm the bubble witch, stop calling yourself that. And then she was like, no, I'm not. I'm going to keep doing it. I was like, oh, okay, fine. At that point, I had thought maybe bubbles were going to be my niche. This was back in 2018. And I quickly realized I wasn't ready to dive into bubbles quite the way Meadow had. So I sort of was like, you know what? Yes, you are the bubble witch. I do bubble magic sometimes when it is requested, but it is not the thing I would say I specialize in. Whereas Meadow is absolutely a bubble magician. But then we met later. So we cleared that up, whatever. It was just an internet conversation. And then we worked together in 2020 with Seven Textures and Ghostly Circus. And that was awesome. She was great to work with. And then we kind of became friends after that. And it's been really great. I like working with Meadow a lot. We talk about ideas for magic and stuff. And I like having a woman peer in magic that it lives close enough to hang out with. We're also friends in real life. We go to parties together sometimes, like, you know, not to work.
You and previous guests like Kayla Dressler, Magic in Heels, Lucy Darling, Carissa Hendricks, and Magical Katrina all have something in common. Y'all have been on Penn & Teller's Fool Us. Can you tell me about that experience? What was it like when you were notified to be on that show? How much time were you given to prepare? And why Polaroids?
So I'll answer the first three quickly. One, what it was like to find out I was on the show was exciting, but it's also a little bit of a long process. It goes back and forth before they definitely give you the yes. Two, how long was I given to prepare? I was kept in limbo of like, we want you from November until about, I'm going to say end of March, beginning of April. And then they were like, yes, you're on. No, maybe it was in March, sometime in March. You're definitely on. And so basically then from March until the shoot at the end of June, I worked on the act. But I had, because I had known that there was a good chance I would be on starting in November, I hired a writer. So I asked Jonathan Burns to work on some of the comedy writing with me. And I had a director who I was rehearsing with 2 to 3 times a week. 3 times a week for sure leading up to the show. Actually, every day for like the 2 weeks. I mean, I rehearsed every day, but I was rehearsing specifically with my director 2 to 3 times a week. So I rehearsed like crazy. I spent a bunch of money on some research and development to make my props better. I did so much rehearsal and that really paid off. Final question was why Polaroids? The reason I chose Polaroids is I didn't want to use cards. And I also love Polaroids. I do like vintage stuff. I mean, if you're looking at my room, see all the weird old frames and then probably you can see my head's blocking it, but I have a really great chandelier I rehabbed in the back. So yeah, I like old stuff. Now the longer answer is my actual experience filming. You know that nightmare that you have? Because you do some performance, right? So that nightmare that you have where you show up to your gig and suddenly everything that you know how to do, you cannot do. It goes wrong and you just can't seem to fix it. That was what it was like to film. I was at the end of the day and I knew that. I even tried to request to go earlier. I tried to ask the producers when I saw I was the last one up. I was like, hey, you know, I'm on East Coast time, so maybe I could go earlier. And they were like, no, we think you'll be fine. And I said, okay. In my head, I thought that was worth a try. I was at the end of the day. They were doing fine. They were basically on time, but they, you know, at the end of the day, I worked in film and television myself and people are ready to leave at the end of the day. They do not want to take a long time. So it's a little rushed, which is not anyone's fault. Also, it was a little weird because it's COVID, so there's no audience. I don't know how they're shooting now. It keeps changing because the COVID restrictions change and then everything changes how they do their operations. But when I was there, it went, okay, you rehearse. We're going to take 5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes to talk about the lighting, the cues, what's on the board behind you. We're going to let you stand in the middle of the stage while we do this. And then you're just going to shoot. So there's no reset time between your rehearsal and your shooting. The stand-ins were, they are probably lovely people, but they were very tired and they totally messed up the trick on me. And so this trick that I've been rehearsing every day and working on the writing with and making sure I'm clear and all of these things and has worked a bunch of times before, I get to the end of it and I don't realize until the very end that they didn't follow any of the directions. They didn't look at the photo. They didn't write down what it was a picture of. They just didn't do it. And then I freaked out and I had a whole mental freak out inside. I remember thinking, do not cry. You are standing on the soundstage. Cannot cry. You just got to think about what you did wrong. But think about where you went wrong. How did you go wrong? And I'm just standing there as these voices of God are like talking above me and talking about how to change the settings and like nothing that is directly affecting me, but I can't leave stage to just like take a breath and try to calm down. Finally, they let me leave and I asked for a minute to do a theater shakeout exercise, right? The stupid little 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, one of those. I did that with my bubbles in my pocket. For those of you that don't know about bubbles, if you shake them up, they do not work. I shake everything up. I'm like, okay, time to do this. I go out and I'm still freaking out because I still think I somehow messed up the trick in the rehearsal. No one has told me that's not the case. I just have to go out and do the filming. And because there's no audience, I'm going to do this trick that I definitely just messed up with the stand. I mean, I didn't, but I thought I messed up with the stand with Teller and Allison Hannigan. And so I don't really remember I don't remember the shoot. I don't remember what happened. The only part that I remember is that when it came time for Teller to blow the bubble, I had to reset 8 times. Luckily, I'm in film and television, so I'm aware of how those things work. So I just kept slow and steady whenever you're ready and holding up to his mouth. And then the bubble wouldn't work. And I would take a breath and go, slow and steady whenever you're ready. Over and over again. By the 6th time, I was like, hey, I have another bottle of bubbles. If we could, I can get it. And they were like, you can't leave stage. Just keep going. And I was like, okay. Finally, on the 8th time, a bubble was blown. The trick worked. I remember none of what happened. I remember none of it at all, except that moment of standing in front of Teller and having him blow the bubble 8 times in a row and it not working. But It's really a success story. This is a happy ending because you see, I was then so worried from June 28th until I found out in December 27th that it was going to air on January 28th. I just assumed it was never going to come out and maybe they wouldn't use it. That was wrong. It came out and I was really then also worried about it being bad. And it wasn't bad because I rehearsed. So my lizard brain kicked in and was like, we have done this so many times. We can do the act and it's going to be just as it always is. It's going to be great. And so it still is great. And people, when they watch it, can't tell that I was dying inside that whole time. I really can't see it on my face that much. There's a couple stills where I can see it, but really, like, in motion, you can't tell I'm freaking out. But I was freaking out.
So you had many lives. You said you've done cabaret. Another one in your life is costume designer for film and television. Which movies and TV shows have you worked on?
The most known one that you would have had a chance of seeing is, and the most recent thing I did, I haven't done a project in a long time, was the reenactments for about half of the episodes of the reboot of Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes, I've seen those, the new ones that are on Netflix.
Yeah, so a few of the, I forget the titles of them. The one about the UFOs in 1969. The one about the kid who disappears from the party. Another one about a child that gets abducted in New York City.
Do you remember the first costume you had to design?
You know, I guess technically, we said the first full costume design job that I had was something called Zombie Cheerleader Camp, which I'm also in. There are many bad movies that if you look on the internet, you can watch me in some truly astounding pieces of trash. titles such as Zombie Cheerleader Camp or Les Pires, just a bunch of bad horror movies early on. But then I sort of, you know, I in the beginning I was doing both, like trying to be in the movie and also do the costume design. And I think after Zombie Cheerleader Camp, I was like, nah, I just want to be behind the scenes on the movies. That seems more fun. So for a long time I worked behind the scenes. But I tell you about my favorite movie I've costume designed.
Okay, you can tell me that.
It is called Zeros. It is done by, it was a film by my ex-boyfriend, who's also one of my very good friends, Charles St. John Smith III. It is a vigilante superhero buddy cop movie, and it's very Philadelphia. It was really fun to do the evolution of their superhero costumes as DIY idiots that can't sew. I got a lot of product placement for that film, actually. I reached out to many companies like Fox Racing and stuff like that. Got a lot of free cool stuff to make their armor with. That movie was really fun. It had the most interesting costume design for me of some of the stuff I've worked on.
So you mentioned earlier that you have videos on your YouTube page called Oh, the Places You'll Go Again. Can you explain about those?
Oh, the Places You'll Go Again features level 100 weirdos across the country at this point, but at some point, who knows, across the world, where I go to places I think are amazing that one person has said to themselves, you know what's important? Sharing this with the world. An example of my favorite is Enchanted Forest in Salem, Oregon. It is a wonderland, storybook land, old English village, and a bunch of other things all made out of cement, all hand carved out of cement and Bondo and painted, and it's painted sort of wild colors. And it's this whole family affair at this point. One of the things that the show does is explores the history of how the thing gets made. Enchanted Forest has a particularly interesting story. A man named Roger Tofty wanted to have a thing for his kids to appreciate in the part of Oregon they were living in, something that was fun for them to do and wholesome. And so he created the storybook land for them. And it took him 8 years, from 1963 until 1971. And 71 is when it opened. So they just had their 50-year anniversary. And all of his kids grew up playing in this park. It took a very long time to finish, obviously, as they always say, over time and over budget. It's kind of the theme of the place. But I think that's probably most very detailed things end up being over time and over budget. He took a long time to build it. And then as his kids grew up, they became part of the family business. They create all the music for the park. They make the animatronics. They write the plays. They make the costumes. Everyone, it's like his children all do the work for that now. And at this point, his grandchildren are in on it because they host festivals and stuff there.
Where do you see yourself in the next year or two?
Hopefully the season 2 of Magic Storytime will be filmed and in the can, and I will shop it around and I will get it distributed. That's the plan right now, is to create a sizzle reel and find investors so we can start filming again this winter. I don't think we're going to do it live this time. I think that was a stubborn move on my part that the other people on the production such as Charles, that's my ex that is made Zeros, but also was the producer for Magic Storytime. That was one of the things that was really cool when we did the show the first time, is that there was live switching. We had people operating the three cameras, but Charles would stand at the board and switch the camera angles as necessary as the show happened live. And that was like, that's like the thing I'm really proud of. Whenever I tell someone about Magic Storytime, I go, we had a live switcher. So yeah, in a year, hopefully Magic Storytime is finding itself a home and available for widespread viewing. And hopefully I'm just still doing lots of magic and traveling, and oh, my tiny house should be done by then too.
Do you hope you'll play at the Magic Castle?
I did the Magic Castle back in May and it was amazing. It's just what everyone says it is. It's so great working at the Magic Castle. The Magic Castle is amazing. I would love to go back. I think when we were there in May, we had talked to Jack about coming back sometime in the wintertime, because ideally we try to travel through January and work warmer places. So right before the pandemic, we did Marvin's Magic Theater, which is Jeff Hobson's place out in Palm Springs. We also did Montauk Mountain House and a bunch of that was not warm, but that was nice. So yeah, the Magic Castle will be amazing. I'm actually heading out to the Chicago Magic Lounge in a month, which is exciting. I think in an ideal world, I do places like Chicago Magic Lounge and the Magic Castle once a year. That'd be great. Because, you know, it's not, those are the places that it is amazing to play. It's amazing to work your act like that. Doing your theatrical magic stuff is always a good feeling.
Will you ever come to Canada?
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to come to Canada. Did you go to FISM?
No, I did not. I missed that one.
I also didn't go to FISM, but I know that our friend Simon did really well. Yeah, I would like to go to FISM at some point. I think Francis would like to compete in FISM. And I can make an announcement. This is very exciting. I just...
Go for it.
Performing solo a bunch, but I finally put together a one-woman, hour-long theatrical magic show, somewhat autobiographical. It's called Lindsay Noel, I'm a Magician. It had its debut at the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, and it won Best in Its Category for the Philadelphia Fringies. So I'm now an award-winning magic show creator.
Very cool. So finally, where can people find more about you? Online, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, website?
I am on Instagram and TikTok at Lindsay Noel Magic. Lindsay with an E, Noel like Christmas, Magic without a K. Okay. At Lindsay Noel Magic. I'm there on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. My Twitter is just a void. I guess you can follow me on Twitter. I don't know. It's at Lindsay Noel with an underscore at the end, because you can only have so many characters. And they should check out my YouTube channel for more clips about Magic Storytime. There's some of our cute sketches and some of the characters we talked about on the show today are up there. That is also Lindsay Noel Magic on YouTube. And my website is lindsaynoelmagic.com. So basically just, you know, go to Google. You type in Lindsay Noel Magic. I'll come up.
Thank you, Lindsay, for joining me on this episode of Let's Chat With.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very fun.